Good morning, everyone. My name is Musho, also known as Rodney Allen Greenblatt, and I'm a senior student here at the Village Zendo in great, glittering, gritty New York City. Welcome to any newcomers. Do we have any newcomers? One newcomer. Thank you very much for coming. Welcome to our regulars. Lots of regulars today. And welcome to all those listening to this as a recording, whoever you may be out there in internet land. Today is November 22nd, and Thanksgiving is just a few days away, so I thought it would be a good excuse to give a talk on gratitude. So today's talk is called Thanks for Everything. Thanks for everything. And I mean everything in the cosmic Buddhist sense of all space and time, in the 10 directions, without discrimination, including everything, everything. So that would include, starting, you know, small and working out, that would include my family, my father, Dina, my daughters, Cleo and Kim, which I'm mentioning because Cleo's about to have a baby. Any moment, actually, I think. Her due date was a couple of days ago, and no sign of it happening. She's just healthy, and they're just hanging out. Dina's out there. She lives in Eugene, Oregon. So I'm very grateful for that. It would be exciting to have a grandchild. Then I would thank all my friends and my teachers, and everyone sitting here. I'm so grateful that you came here today. Besides people, I would thank, I would be grateful for all the places in this world, and I would start with the places I've been to, like the cozy Hudson Valley, hilly, foggy, beautiful San Francisco, sprawling, creative Tokyo, lush Hawaii, and glittering, gritty New York City. Everything would also include all of history, the whole past. I'm grateful to the cave person who figured out how to make a sharp rock and use it as a tool. I mean, that's important that that happened. And I'm also grateful for the computer engineers who designed my iPhone and many people in China who put my iPhone together. What would I do without them? They're important, and I thank them. Those are all positive things to be thankful for, but what about gratitude for the dark side? Our world is full of wars and slavery and poverty and injustice and the free-flowing ignorance, anger, and greed that seems to be everywhere. Agony and disease, cruelty and depression, and senseless brutality. It's frightening for me to start to list any of the specific incidents. Is there a way to be grateful for those negative experiences, to include them? Maybe there is. I cite for you to see case 3 of the Blue Cliff Record. Master Ma was unwell. The temple superintendent asked him, "Teacher, how has your venerable health been in recent days?" The great master said, "Sun face Buddha, moon face Buddha." Sometimes I watch CNN, the news channel, and they have a segment called The Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer. The Situation Room is a term that I think is referencing military planning of some kind. I think when I was a kid, I used to imagine these like tables with all these little tanks set up, and they would move them, and the generals would be there. I think that's the kind of thing that this idea of the Situation Room is about. But of course, being a Zen student, I thought about the Situation Room in a different way. The whole world is a situation room. It's nothing but a situation. The dictionary defines the word situation as a set of circumstances in which one finds oneself. So our reality, our whole reality, could be described as nothing more than a really big situation. It's a set of circumstances that we find ourselves in. We're in a situation, and we have to find ourselves in it. It makes sense. When we can't be grateful for all the negative, awful things that happen, we either try to avoid them or look for the cause. And if the cause is not obvious, we might start to look for someone to blame. CNN is obsessed with blame. Who is behind the evil, and how can they be stopped? It's a very natural question, very natural thinking. How can they be stopped? Of course, I'm talking about the terrible attacks in Paris last week. Cruel, unfair, mass violence. But CNN is exploring every aspect. They tell a gripping story of fear and retaliation, the harrowing stories of the bystanders, and the heroic efforts of the police and military. It's hard to stop watching it. They show politicians' opinions and all kinds of experts. They show graphs, charts, and shots of enemy website propaganda. They love that. There was one particular interview that I happened to watch that really struck me. It was an interview with a little old lady shopping at a corner store in a small suburban town in Belgium. Belgium has some connection to the problem. So CNN is interviewing this little lady on the street. She was sweet, kind of frail-looking woman, probably in her late 70s. But when they asked her about the problem of immigrants coming from the Middle East, she shyly admitted that probably what had to be done is that the whole country of Syria should be destroyed. She admitted that she thought it should be wiped off the map by massive bombing. That's what she said. It's a frightening plan, and I wondered how many people might agree with her. If I ever become a multi-billionaire philanthropist, I'm going to start an alternative cable TV station called ZNN, which is, of course, Zen News Network. On ZNN, we're always going to turn the light inward on every story. And every story will be about the self. The show will bring the experts, officials, and pundits together and make them sit in silence for 2 30-minute periods before they are asked to speak from the heart in an unrehearsed way and without crosstalk from the other participants. The show's hosts will be seasoned Zen teachers who are also trained psychologists, right? Then, after we hear the opinions and the life experiences of the participants, a huge gong will ring, and everyone will recite the 4 Bodhisattva vows. Now, of course, I can go on and on about how ZNN will fill its broadcast day, like what the sets would be like, and the logo graphics, the sponsors, and of course the endless fundraisers that we'd always be having. But I'm not going to talk about that. That's just my mind, you know, reeling out. It's the way I think. The situation room is us. It's not out there in CNN land. The situation is the self, and the self has to be explored in every aspect. Wolf Blitzer cannot look into it for you. You have to look into it yourself. Wolf Blitzer should look at all the beginningless karma that made him the great newsman he is. Maybe he will see that he is none other than the situation room itself, a set of circumstances If only he could see it. Now, I wrote this yesterday and I was thinking about Wolf Blitzer. I really don't know if Wolf Blitzer does meditation. But I do know that his friend, Anderson Cooper, that guy, he does do meditation, actually. And he did a segment about mindfulness meditation. So I can't really say that Wolf Blitzer doesn't do meditation. He might. It's hard to imagine. But I think he might. When we sit in Zazen, we have the opportunity to see the situation. With direction from Shakyamuni Buddha, all the Zen ancestors of the past, and our kind, wise 21st century teachers, we are given some instructions. Here is a passage from Dogen's Fugan Zazenji, translated by Kaz Tanahashi. Okay. For Zazen, a quiet room is appropriate. Drink and eat in moderation. Let go of all involvement and let myriad things rest. Do not think good or bad. Do not judge right or wrong. Stop conscious endeavor and analytic introspection. Do not try to become a Buddha. How could being a Buddha be limited to sitting or not sitting? In an appropriate place for sitting, set out a thick mat and put a round cushion on top of it. Sit either in the full or half lotus posture. For the full lotus posture, first place the right foot on the left thigh and then the left foot on the right thigh. For the half lotus posture, place the left foot on the right thigh. Loosen the robes and belts and arrange them in an orderly way. Then place the right hand, palm up, on the left foot and the left hand on the right hand with the ends of the thumbs lightly touching each other. Like that. I love how Dogen gets into the basic technical as well as the philosophical in the same writing. Then it says, sit straight up without leaning to the right or left and without bending forward or backward. The ears should be in line with the shoulders and the nose in line with the navel. Rest the tongue against the roof of the mouth with lips and teeth closed. Keep the eyes open and breathe gently through the nose. Having adjusted your body in this manner, take a breath and exhale fully, then sway your body to left and right. Now sit steadfastly and think not thinking. How do you think not thinking? Beyond thinking. This is the essential art of Zazen. He goes on. The Zazen I speak of is not learning meditation. It is simply the Dharma gate of enjoyment and ease. It is the practice realization of complete enlightenment. Realize the fundamental point, free from binding, of nets and baskets. Once you experience it, you are like a dragon swimming in the water or a tiger reposing in the mountains. Know that the true Dharma emerges of itself, clearing away hindrances and distractions. Thank you, Master Dogen, for writing that for us in the year 1243. I did the math. 772 years ago, he wrote that. We will try to follow your instructions to the best of our ability. Our esteemed teacher Shinryu Sensei gave a talk on Thursday night, and he lamented about one of our current situations here at the Zendo. Our records show that attendance is down for sitting meditation on regular weeknight schedule compared to last year. He did not mention that attendance is up for our programming. Workshops, special events, attendance is up compared to last year. There's no clear reason why this has occurred, but, of course, I have an opinion. Workshops with experienced teachers in interesting subject matter and interactions with fellow students are enjoyable. The benefits are easy to feel. Our programming and our stuff that we do here is great and fun and involving. But Zazen is difficult. it is much more difficult to see and feel the benefits. Your knees may hurt, your foot may go to sleep, and you may be generally uncomfortable, bored, or sleepy. Even if you experience some kind of euphoria, the teachers of present and past will tell you that euphoria is good, but it is nothing special. It's a wonder that anyone shows up here at all. But you do. You come here because the true self knows, deep down, that Zazen is not about you. Zazen is about everything, the whole situation. You depend on everything, and everything depends on you. It's not glamorous, profound, or exotic. It's just the way things are. What is the highest meaning of the holy truths? Zen says nothing holy, nothing to attain. There was a wonderfully annoying article in the New York Times several weeks ago by a witty author who felt that meditation was probably a boring fad, and that while meditation could certainly be helpful for some people, all the benefits could be gained by other methods, such as exercise, sports, helping others, or even reading a book on a quiet afternoon. Our senior student, Monk Bokushu, gave a really wonderful talk about this article. Bokushu did not disagree that mindfulness, calmness, and less anxiety could be attained by other means. But he went on and spoke passionately, and I agree, that those wonderful benefits could be attained through meditation, but those benefits were not the point of Zazen at all. Right? Bokushu and I, if we understand our teachers correctly, know Zazen as the space and time when the self can be studied. When the self is studied sincerely, an unpleasant dark side might be seen. The dark side that contributes or allows wars, poverty, and racism to exist may be seen emanating from our own self, not phantom enemies on CNN. It is painful to see those aspects of ourselves. Like the little old lady in Belgium who wants to murder everyone in Syria. If we really want the world to change, we have to look at those fearful energies. It's unpleasant. But Dogen says, when the self is studied and the myriad things are exposed, then you are like a dragon swimming in the water or a tiger reposing in the mountains. How great. I love both of those images. The dragon, so smoothly, and then the tiger reposing in the mountains. It's lovely. I would venture to add that maybe after the swimming dragon and the reposing tiger are gone, all that's left is gratitude. I thank everyone in this room, everyone who attends our Zazen Kai day-long retreats and our winter and summer intensives. I thank all the Zen students who may hear this recording. Thank you for sitting in Zazen and studying the self. You are true heroes on the true path, saving all sentient beings. Now, usually in my talks, I have an interactive element. And today, I want to extend thanksgiving for the whole wild, unpredictable situation that we find ourselves in, the whole thing. After the bell rings and we finish chanting, I'm going to walk to the mat and make 3 bows, as is usually done after the Dharma talk. But today, I'm going to spend 3 extra seconds in each bow with my head down on the mat, bowing in gratitude. And I hope you can join me. Standing bow is fine. In those brief seconds, in those brief seconds, silently and humbly, thank your family and friends and teachers and everyone and everything. We do this kind of bow in our Fusatsu ceremony on once a month, where we atone for everything. So this is similar. But we won't have Fusatsu this week because it's Thanksgiving. So just as we bow down and really let go in Fusatsu, I'd like to do that today, just for a few seconds when I make my bows at the end. So again, thanks for being here, and thanks for everything.